Later that evening, Christopher walked into the dining room carrying a cake. I eyed him curiously. The cake hadn't been part of our plan. He grinned and set it down in front of Janie. There was a giant blue stork carrying a wrapped-up baby in its beak, etched in frosting on top.
"Daddy, I like the birdie," she squealed.
"Do you see what the bird is carrying?" he asked. Janie nodded enthusiastically, always eager to give the right answer.
"A baby."
He grabbed my hand and pulled me next to him, wrapping his arm around my waist. I held the shirt behind my back, waiting for my cue. "That's right. We have something really exciting to tell you about a baby." He squeezed my side. I pulled out the t-shirt from behind my back and held it out in front of me. The neon purple letters proclaimed, "I am a big sister."
"Janie, this is your special t-shirt."
She grabbed it from me before I could read her what it said.
"It's pretty."
She started pulling off the shirt she had on. Christopher laid his hand on her shoulder.
"Slow down for a second, kiddo."
"There's a special message on your shirt, just for you," I said.
"Really?"
She flipped it over and stared at the letters.
"What's it say?"
"It says, I am a big sister," I said. She looked from me to Christopher and back again, totally lost. We knelt in front of her. Christopher pointed to my stomach.
"Your mommy is growing a baby in her stomach. Once the baby is big enough, it's going to come out of her stomach and become part of our family. That means you're going to be a big sister."
Janie poked my stomach.
"There's a baby in here?"
I nodded. "Soon, you'll be able to feel it move around inside me. It will kick and do all kinds of other things. It'll be so much fun." She looked up at me.
"How does it come out of there?"
She poked me again, harder this time.
"Gentle when you touch my stomach, honey," I said, placing my hand on top of hers. "Sometimes the doctors have to take the baby out of mommy's stomachs, and other times the baby comes out of a mommy's vagina."
She crinkled her nose.
"Yuck, that's gross."
Christopher and I laughed.
"Can we go outside?" she asked.
She pulled her arms back into the shirt she'd been wearing previously, the big sister shirt forgotten.
"Are you excited to be a big sister?" Christopher asked.
She looked at him with confusion, like she wasn't really sure what he was asking and was trying to figure out the correct response because she loved nothing more than pleasing him.
"Yes, I'm excited," she said,
but her voice was flat. I was determined to get Janie in school before the baby came. We'd given up on school for a while and agreed to give her more adjustment time, but all of that was different now. I wanted to get her settled while I still had the energy to help with the transition. I handled things this time and went with a different approach. I enrolled Janie in a traditional private school, one that was more structured and only a few blocks from the hospital. Part of the admissions process was a half-day visit, and Janie was grinning from ear to ear when I picked her up afterward.
"How'd it go?"
I asked, buckling her into her car seat.
"I met a new friend. Her name is Elodie, and she wants to be my friend too. She says I can be the boss of her," she said. "I like this school."
She talked about Elodie until she went to bed that night. We didn't think twice about saying yes when they called to tell us she'd been accepted. Before, we'd had to lead her in kicking and screaming, but this time, she went willingly and waved goodbye like she couldn't wait for me to leave. For the first 2 weeks, I obsessively checked my phone, waiting for the call to tell me that she'd acted out in some way, had an accident or bit a kid, but the call never came. She liked her new school and seemed happy there.
She came home excited to show Christopher and me the projects she'd made, and it wasn't long before our refrigerator was cluttered with her artwork. She called Elodie her best friend and said they were a secret team. Her teacher, Mrs. Tinney, raved about how great Janie was. She said she was one of the brightest kids in the class and had had one of the smoothest transitions she'd ever seen. We beamed with pride. With Janie in preschool 4 hours every day, I started planning for the baby. Allison and my mom teased me about it mercilessly, sending me funny texts throughout the day about nesting. I didn't mind. I enjoyed every minute of it. I went through every closet and got rid of anything we hadn't worn in the last 2 years. Once I'd gone through all the closets, I tackled the cupboards, throwing out old Tupperware and replacing broken sets of pots and pans. I organized all the towels and washcloths in the linen closet in the hallway. I rented a carpet cleaner from Home Depot and spent 2 days shampooing all the rugs. Normally, I wasn't such an obsessive cleaner, but I loved it. I was getting rid of anything old and getting ready for something new. I cleaned out everything in the office and moved all the furniture to the garage so that we could make the office into the baby's room. Back when we had thought having a child was a possibility, I had scoured Pinterest boards for baby room ideas, but I deleted all my boards after we'd adopted Janie and had to start from scratch. I spent my evening sitting next to the fire, scrolling through pictures of baby furniture and accessories. It was hard to believe that in less than 2 years, we'd gone from spending our evenings cuddled up next to each other on the couch with our laptops open, flipping through hundreds of pictures of kids up for adoption, to preparing to welcome our second child into the world. "We're going to have 2 kids. Can you believe it, Christopher? 2 kids! He got up from the couch, walked over to my chair, and perched on the armrest. He gazed down at me. "I've never seen you look happier. And I'm pretty sure there's nothing I love more in this world than seeing you happy."
30. Christopher Bauer. It was a bad idea to have Janie at the baby shower. I didn't want to be here either. I didn't understand why I couldn't take Janie for the day while they did their thing, but Hannah insisted we come. All the husbands were invited. Baby showers were no longer women-only events, but I wouldn't mind going back to when they had been. Usually Hannah turned into a basket case whenever we had a big party or event at the house, but since Lillian and Allison were throwing the shower, she didn't have to do much except relax and enjoy herself. She sat in the living room with her feet propped up on her embroidered stool while Lillian and Allison bustled around the house taking care of things. Her feet had swollen up as soon as she'd hit the 6-month mark. Janie ran room to room trying to get people's attention.
"Janie, can you go outside and play so Grandma and Aunt Allison can work?"
Hannah asked from her position in the living room.
"I want to help."
She stomped her feet and crossed her arms. I watched from my spot on the couch in the living room to see what Janie would do.
"Sweetie, why don't you go outside and play with your daddy?"
Lillian shot me a pointed look. I'd tried helping earlier in the day, but I'd gotten pushed out of the way, just like Janie. I tucked my phone in the back pocket of my jeans.
"Let's go, sweetheart,"
I said, getting up and heading toward the back door. She didn't move from her spot in the kitchen.
"Janie, we don't have time for this. Come on. Let's just go outside and play. We can do whatever you want,"
I said.
"I want to help,"
she said. She stuck out her lower lip in an exaggerated pout. Lillian handed her one of the balloons she'd just blown up.
"Here, take this and play with it outside. You can throw it up and play catch."
Janie snatched it from her. She glared at her, then promptly squeezed her hands together and popped the balloon, making us all jump.
"Janie, that wasn't nice,"
Hannah said.
"You're not nice,"
Janie fired back. We were one step away from a battle. I quickly scooped Janie up and threw her over my shoulder like a sack of potatoes. I tickled her legs while we walked and brought her outside. Sometimes it worked and diverted one of her meltdowns, but her face was still set in stone when we reached the yard. Her behavior didn't get any better as the day wore on.
Janie scowled at people as they filed into the house and greeted Hannah. She barely spoke to my mom when she arrived and refused to respond when people spoke to her. She popped any balloon she could get her hands on, continually startling people. Everyone tried to laugh it off, but it didn't take long for it to become annoying. At first, we ignored her like we did with so much of her attention-seeking behavior, but we had to step in when she went over to the cake. It was a three-layer tower made of cupcakes and almost as elaborate as our wedding cake. It probably cost as much.
"Janie, no!"
I yelled when I spotted her reaching for one of the cupcakes. She pretended like she hadn't heard me. Everyone stared as she grabbed the cupcake from the center and pulled it out. I held my breath, waiting for the cake to tumble. Thankfully, it didn't.
"Stop it!"
Hannah said.
"If you're not going to behave during the party, then you can go to your room."
She pointed down the hallway that led to Janie's bedroom. I looked at Hannah in surprise. We'd never sent Janie to her room before. It was such a normal way to discipline a child, but what would Janie do in there by herself? It had been a while since she'd had a full-on meltdown, and I really wanted to avoid it, especially when our house was full of people. Janie bit into the cupcake, and her mouth filled with yellow frosting. She grinned at Hannah, the yellow staining her teeth.
"You're going to be a bad mommy."
Hannah recoiled like Janie had punched her in the gut. She brought both hands up to her face and covered her mouth. Everyone in the kitchen started talking at once to break the tension and pretend like they hadn't heard what Janie had said. I grabbed Janie's arm and dragged her through the living room. She started screaming as we moved through people.
"You're hurting me, Daddy! You're hurting me!"
I just kept going, my face red with embarrassment and anger. I shoved her in the room and slammed the door behind us.
"Don't you ever say anything like that to Mommy again!"
I was fuming. I'd never been so mad at her. She threw herself down on the floor, sobbing.
"Stop it, Janie. Just stop," I hissed.
Everyone at the party could hear her, which only made her cries seem louder. She beat her fists against the floor. Her wails came one on top of another. She wasn't even pausing long enough to breathe. Usually my heart ached for her when she was upset, but I was too angry over what she'd said to Hannah to help. I hurt for Hannah. This day meant so much to her, and Janie had ruined it. Janie's cries shifted from angry rage to sobs of devastation.
"I'm a bad girl! I'm a bad, bad, bad girl!"
she cried. Her self-deprecation tugged at my heartstrings, and my anger started dissipating. This had to be hard for her. She didn't understand that the baby wouldn't take us away from her, and that there was enough of our love to go around. She was just hurting. More of my anger drained. She was still curled on the floor, shaking. I plopped down next to her and reached for her, but she jerked away. She curled into a ball.
"You're not a bad girl. You just made a bad choice. That's all. Just a bad choice."
I rubbed her back until the sobs subsided. "Everyone makes bad choices sometimes. It's going to be okay."
31. Hannah Bauer. My stomach churned as we walked into Janie's school for our meeting with Mrs. Tinney to discuss Janie's behavior. She'd been acting out since the shower 3 weeks ago. My due date was 2 weeks away. What would I do if Janie got kicked out of another preschool? Mrs. Tinney's classroom looked like the classrooms I'd grown up in. There was a huge carpet in the center of the room for the children to gather during circle time. Cubbies lined the back wall with the children's names neatly labeled on each one. Stations were set up around the room for various activities, and the walls proudly displayed the kids' artwork. I was too big to squeeze into any of the miniature chairs, so I stood while Christopher and Mrs. Tinney sat. It made the situation more awkward and uncomfortable than it already was. "How are you feeling?" she asked before getting started. "Ready to have this baby?" I smiled, trying to be polite, but I really wanted to know why we were there. "Those last few weeks seemed to drag on forever, not to mention that all three of my kids were overdue," she said. "Ah, let's hope this one comes on time." I rubbed my hand on my swollen bump instinctively, just like I did any time someone mentioned the baby. She laid her hands on the desk. Normally, I would have called you in for a conference as soon as we noticed Janie struggling, but since you were expecting another child, I figured her problems were just part of that transition and would pass. Only children almost always have problems when another member is being added to the family. Janie was reverting back to behavior we hadn't seen in months. She went into uncontrollable screaming fits almost every day. She refused to eat and threw food at us, yelling for something different and claiming she'd throw up if she had to eat it. She'd started having accidents again, but this time she had them at home and school. She'd always hoarded food in her room underneath her bed, but now she'd started adding all kinds of weird objects that didn't make any logical sense. Christopher's shoes, the remote control, paper towels from the kitchen, and lied when we confronted her about it. Dr. Chandler said we should ignore it like we'd done before, but it wasn't working this time. I wanted to meet today so I could let you know that Elodie's mother is expecting a call from you about what's going on between Elodie and Janie at school. I wanted us to have a chance to talk about that conversation before it happened.
What's going on with her and Elodie? Christopher asked.
His face was lined with concern. Janie referred to Elodie as her best friend. We'd never heard about any problems. Elodie started asking to stay inside during recess, which was my first red flag. I couldn't let her do that, since all children have to be outside during recess. But I watched her closely and noticed she cried a lot while we were on the playground. Whenever I asked her about it, she said that Janie was being mean. What was Janie doing to her? I asked. Elodie wouldn't say what she was doing, only that she was mean. I took Janie aside and asked her about it too, but she said she didn't know why Elodie was so upset. It wasn't anything that was unusual. Kids fight and get their feelings hurt all the time. But then Elodie started refusing to play with Janie. It seemed like more than your typical spat. Elodie was genuinely afraid of Janie. She looked back and forth between us before continuing, making sure we were digesting what she'd said. Elodie's mother called me this morning and told me Janie has been hurting Elodie at school. She's been coming home with bruises. Her mother didn't think anything of it at first, but it kept happening, and she grew more concerned. Last night, she noticed Elodie's entire arm was covered in bruises. She finally got her to talk, and Elodie said that Janie pinches her when no one is looking. A chill ran down my neck. Janie had gotten in trouble at her previous preschools, but she'd never hurt anyone on purpose. It took Christopher a while to speak.
Are you sure it's her? He asked.
Positive. I asked Janie about it yesterday, and she admitted it.
She admitted it?
What did she say when you asked her about it? I asked. She hadn't said anything to me about it when I'd picked her up from school. She'd acted totally normal. She said she wanted to make Elodie cry. When I asked her why she wanted to make her cry, she said that she likes to see what people look like when they cry. Mrs. Tinney's face was grim. I'd never seen her look so serious.
Did she say anything else? Christopher asked.
No. That was it. I explained to her that it was not okay to make other people cry for any reason. She sat back in her chair and folded her hands on her lap. As you can imagine, her mother is very angry. She wants Janie expelled from the school. I don't want to expel Janie. I really don't. I tend to think she's going through a rough time with the new baby.
She is. We've had all sorts of problems at home, too, Christopher interrupted.
Mrs. Tinney nodded. That's what I assumed. However, because Janie has been violent to another student, if the other parent is uncomfortable with her being here, then we will have to ask her to leave.
Is that why you called us here? Are you kicking her out? I asked.
My head whirled. What would I do if they kicked her out? Could I get her into another school before the baby got here? What were the other ones on the list? Would you be comfortable telling Elodie's mother about Janie's history? She leaned forward. The only reason I'm asking is because I don't want to lose Janie. She's a great girl and an absolute joy to have in class. She's just struggling right now, and I want to help her rather than punish her. It might help Elodie's mother be more compassionate if you shared her story. So if she doesn't insist on expelling Janie, then you're saying she can stay? Christopher asked. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Then that's what we'll do, if you think it will help, Christopher said. I wanted Janie to stay at the school as much as Christopher, even more. But something about telling Elodie's mom about Janie's past didn't feel right to me. I listened as Christopher and Mrs. Tinney prattled on about ideas for the conversation, but I grew more uncomfortable the longer they went on. Our walk home after our session was slow since my feet were so swollen, but it felt good to be outside. Before too much longer, it'd be too cold to be outside. I'd tried to keep it in during the session, but I couldn't any longer. Telling Elodie's mother feels like we're using Janie's past as an excuse for her behavior. It's not an excuse. Really? The only reason we're telling her is so that Janie doesn't get kicked out of school. That's not true. We're telling her so that she has all the information she needs to make an informed decision. He spoke like he did when he was instructing interns. Please, Christopher, come on. We wouldn't even consider telling her unless there was a reason. He shook his head, unmoving. Would you tell another student's mom about Janie? That's not the point, he snapped. Just answer my question. It's not what we're talking about. I pulled my hand out of his, irritated by his continual refusal to make Janie accountable for her behavior. It's exactly what we're talking about. Answer the question. No. You know I'm right. I don't want to fight. Oh, my God. I couldn't keep the anger out of my voice. I sounded hysterical, but I didn't care. I was so tired of him backing out of difficult discussions because he claimed he didn't want to fight. You know what, Christopher? Sometimes you have to fight. I stomped off in front of him, leaving him trailing behind on the sidewalk. I knew I looked ridiculous, 9 months pregnant, huffing and puffing down the sidewalk, clearly fighting with my husband. But I didn't care. He didn't speak to me when we got back to the house. He grabbed his keys and went to pick up Janie from Allison's. I had calmed down by the time he returned, but I still felt the same way about telling Elodie's mom because I didn't want to set a precedent for Janie's poor behavior being excused because of her background. Christopher settled Janie in front of the TV and came to talk to me in the kitchen. I was chopping up the vegetables to use in the stir-fry for dinner. You feeling better? He asked. You mean, am I still mad at you? He grinned. Yes. I set the knife down and looked him in the eye. I'm not mad at you anymore, but that doesn't mean that I've changed my mind. Hurting someone else is unacceptable, and Janie needs to know that. The only way she'll ever get that is if she's held accountable for her actions. Any other child would be kicked out of school for what she did. And letting her get kicked out of school is helpful how? Look, I don't want her to get kicked out of school any more than you do. Trust me, it's the last thing I want right now, but we have to set a precedent for this kind of behavior. All we ever say is that we want her to be treated like a normal child. You can't have it both ways, Christopher. You don't know the full story. We haven't even talked to her. How do we know she was hurting her on purpose? I slapped my hand on the counter. Are you kidding me? She pinched her hard enough to leave bruises, more than one time. She absolutely knew she was hurting her. We don't know that. I threw my hands up in frustration. I'm not doing it. Fine.
I'll do it. Where's the number?
I grabbed the contact information from my purse and handed it to him. He tucked it into his pocket.
I'll call her after we talk to Janie, he said. I want to make sure we have Janie's story before I have any more conversations about what she did.
He waited until after dinner to talk to Janie about the Elodie incident, because she was always happiest after she'd eaten. Allison had sent home fresh-baked brownies, and we each had one for dessert.
We want to talk to you about school, Christopher said.
Okay, Janie said, licking the chocolate frosting off the top of her brownie.
We had a meeting with Mrs. Tinney today, and she told us that you've been hurting Elodie by pinching her. Why are you pinching Elodie? I asked.
She shrugged.
I already told Mrs. Tinney. I wanted to see what she looked like when she cried.
But why? Why would you want to make her cry? Christopher asked.
Her lower lip trembled, and she looked embarrassed.
I'm sorry, Daddy.
It's not okay to make people cry. You can't do that, Christopher said, trying his best to sound stern. You're not going to be able to go to school if you keep hurting Elodie. Do you understand?
She nodded. He called Elodie's mom, but it didn't matter anyway. 2 days later, Janie pushed Elodie off the slide, and Elodie broke her arm in 2 places. The school had no choice but to expel Janie.
32. Christopher Bauer. I listened as Hannah described all the articles she'd read about getting an only child, a pet, to help with new baby jealousy and ease the transition. She was fixated on a story from one of her favorite mommy bloggers, because her daughter was the same age as Janie, and they were only a few months ahead of us on the journey. They got her a dog, and it worked wonders for everything she was going through. Isn't that amazing? She asked without waiting for me to respond. She'd already told me the story twice, but I let her tell it a third time since she was so excited about it. Her jealousy disappeared almost right away because she had something special to take care of that was all hers. I think it really might help Janie if we got her a pet. What do you think? This time she paused and waited for an answer. I could tell she already had her mind set on the idea, but I wasn't so sure. How about we get her a goldfish? I asked. Unlike her, I wasn't so keen on adding another being to take care of to our list. Hannah burst out laughing. Goldfish? What is she going to do with a goldfish? Just sit and stare at it while it swims in a bowl? That will last all of 2 minutes before she's bored with it. We need to get her something that she can take care of, something new that's just for her. What about a cat? I frowned. I'm not really a cat person. She punched me in the arm playfully. We're not getting the cat for you. We're getting it for her. Think about it. They're easy to train. You don't have to worry about any of the house training stuff. Just plop them in the litter box and it's done. It'll be something she can sleep with. I think she'll love it. As long as I don't have to sleep with it, I smiled. That weekend we trekked to Petco for their kitten adoptions. We didn't tell Janie where we were going or what we were doing because we wanted to surprise her. I don't want to go shopping, she whined when we pulled into the mall parking lot. Just wait, I said, opening her door. You're going to like it. I hate shopping, she said with a scowl, but she got out of the car and followed us inside. There was a line wrapped all the way through the store. Apparently everyone had had the same idea as us. Wow, I said. Why don't I grab a number and wait in line while you take a look around? I bet Janie would love to see the turtles in the back. What do you say? You want to see the turtles? Turtles! Turtles! Janie squealed. They skipped off while I waited in line. The line went much faster than I had thought it would. Most people just wanted to cuddle and play with the kittens, but they weren't interested in taking one home. I texted Hannah when I was close to the front. They scurried from the back of the store to join me. We saw turtles and snakes and puppies. Can we get a puppy, please? Can we get a puppy? Janie bounced up and down. I smiled down at her. You can't get a puppy. Not today, but
No, puppy.
Her eyes filled with tears.
I want a puppy.
How about a new baby kitty? I asked. Her tears instantly disappeared.
A kitty? I love kitties. I can get a kitty?
You can, I said, ruffling her hair. She stood on her tiptoes, trying to see inside the room where they had the cats. Hannah lifted her up to give her a better look.
Kitties! I see them! Look, Mommy! Look! There's kitties!
She pointed to the kittens tumbling over each other in the separate crates. They were so tiny and cute, my heart swelled like it did every time she got excited. I loved experiencing the world through her eyes. I see them, too. It's almost our turn, I said. It was only a couple more minutes before they called our number, and we stepped inside the room. There were four different litters. Janie immediately went to the litter closest to the door and started picking each kitten up. She held them up one at a time and looked in their eyes.
Nope,
she'd say, and then drop the kitten back in the bin before picking up the next one. She picked up one of the black ones with a tiny white spot on the end of its tail.
This one! I want this one!
Are you sure that's the one you want? You don't want to look at any of the other kittens? I asked. There were three more crates filled with kittens.
Nope. This one. This is the one I want.
She cuddled it against her chest. I looked at Hannah and shrugged. She smiled back at me. Janie and I went through the rest of the store and gathered the supplies we'd need for the kitten while Hannah filled out the adoption paperwork. Janie held the kitten while we shopped and ran through a list of names, changing her mind every 3 seconds until she settled on Blue.
Blue. Yep, her name is going to be Blue, she announced proudly.
How come Blue? I asked. She held her out for me to see.
Her eyes are blue, just like me.
She carried Blue on her lap during the drive home, and I'd never seen her look so happy. She was fascinated by Blue, even when she was trying to jump out of Janie's hands because Blue was terrified of the car. I made sure Hannah carried Blue inside, though, because I was afraid she might freak out and jump out of Janie's arms when we stepped out of the car. Janie spent the rest of the afternoon chasing Blue around the house. I couldn't stop snapping pictures because the two of them were so adorable together. It was a great idea, I whispered to Hannah as we watched the two of them together, cuddled up on the couch. Blue had fallen asleep on Janie's lap.
And she didn't get in trouble all day,
Hannah whispered back. Later that night, Janie and Blue were playing in her bedroom when suddenly we heard awful squealing sounds. We rushed into her room. Janie was sitting on her rug. Pathetic meows came from underneath her bed.
Where's Blue?
Hannah asked. She looked up at us.
She ran away under my bed.
Hannah was too big to bend over and look under the bed, so I ducked down and lay flat. Blue cowered in the far corner. She scurried away every time my hand got close to her and wouldn't stop whimpering. I finally coaxed her forward and pulled her out. Her entire body shook like she was freezing. I went to hand her to Janie, and Blue arched her back, hissing at her. That's weird, I said, looking down. There were bright red spots on my hands.
What is this?
Let me see her, Hannah said. I went over to Hannah, who touched her carefully. Blue was still shaking. Parts of her fur were sticky.
She's bleeding, Hannah said. Janie, what happened?
Janie held up a safety pin.
I poked Blue.
Hannah's mouth dropped open.
You what? I poked her. I wanted to see if she'd bleed.
Janie looked back and forth between us, gauging by our faces that she'd done something wrong. Hannah's face paled.
You wanted to see if she'd bleed,
I repeated robotically.
Yep, and she did. Red. Can I hold her now?
She asked. I held her close to my body, afraid to give her back.
I'm having a turn.
Hannah struggled to regain her composure. She took a seat next to her on the bed, and Janie crawled up on her lap.
You can't hurt Blue. It hurts the kitten when you poke her. Do you understand?
She nodded.
No poking the kitty.
That's right. Don't do that again.
Case number 5243. Interview. Piper Goldstein. Ron found the story of Janie poking Blue deeply unsettling. He hadn't shown any emotion during all the other questioning, even when we'd looked at the crime scene photos in the trailer, and they were brutal. But something about her hurting animals really got to him. Isn't hurting animals a sign of a sociopath? He asked, rearranging his face to look unbothered. It's one of the signs, but other things have to be present too, I said. And none of those things were present? Luke asked. He wasn't nearly as moved by the blue story. He was actually starting to look bored. I couldn't blame him. It felt like we'd been in this room for days, going round and round in the same circles. It's not my area of specialization, and I don't like to comment on things outside my area of expertise, I said, just like my supervisor had instructed me to. It's what they'd made us say to the reporters, too, when they'd asked. The police weren't the only ones asking questions. But you've got to at least have an opinion. Everyone has an opinion. What do you think was going on with Janie? He asked. She was a little girl who'd been hurt badly, and she hurt other people. It always seemed that simple to me, I said. Luke set down his file and peered at me from across the table. But it wasn't that simple, was it?
33. Christopher Bauer. We scheduled an emergency session with Dr. Chandler after the incident with Blue. She listened attentively as we told her the story, then asked us to wait while she stepped into her reception area. She carried papers on clipboards when she came back in the room and handed each of us a pen. "I want you to take a minute and fill these out," she instructed. I settled on the floor, and Hannah tried to arrange her body on one of the huge beanbag chairs. She was so pregnant that it looked painful. I skimmed through the paperwork. There were 30 questions about Janie's behavior. We had to read each statement and circle the number that best described her on a scale of 1 to 5. The questionnaire was filled with statements like, "My child acts cute and charms others to get what he or she wants," and "My child throws screaming fits for hours," and "My child teases, hurts, or is cruel to animals." It was like someone had created a list of Janie's problem areas. Hannah finished before I did. We handed them back to Dr. Chandler and waited anxiously while she went through them. She set the clipboards next to her after she finished. "I think it's time we started to talk about disorders that might be affecting her behavior. The questionnaire I just gave you is called the RADQ, and it's designed to assess the symptoms for reactive adjustment disorder. Are either of you familiar with it?" I'd never heard of it. I looked to Hannah, and she was shaking her head, too. "It's a bit of a controversial disorder in the mental health field, but I'm fairly certain Janie has reactive attachment disorder. I've always had my suspicions, but I was hoping her symptoms would lessen over time. Unfortunately, they seem to be increasing and getting worse." "What is it?" I asked. "What's wrong with her?" Hannah asked at the same time. "It's a disorder caused by a child's inability to form attachments to a caregiver at an early age, and results in difficulties forming attachments with other people. It sounds pretty straightforward and common sense for a child who's been abused, right? Like, of course, their relationships with other people are going to be damaged. But in kids with reactive attachment disorder, it goes much deeper than that. Sometimes they're unable to form any sort of connection with another human being. They have problems with empathy, so we see them do things like hurting other children or animals, just like you've been describing. At times, they don't seem like they have a conscience. One of the most common characteristics we hear from parents whose children have reactive attachment disorder is how charming and delightful their children are in public." I couldn't help but think of all the times Hannah had said that Janie was different when she had an audience. I couldn't deny that she behaved differently. I just thought she liked to be out in the real world and interacting with others. Maybe there was some truth to what Hannah had always said. My heart sank. "These kids tend to be very manipulative and controlling. They're constantly trying to pit people against each other, like we've talked about before with the way she tries to triangulate the two of you. They can make friends, but they have a hard time maintaining them once their friends actually get close to them. The biggest concern we have is when they start to hurt other people or animals. It's a huge red flag. I'm glad you guys came in when you did." I felt like she was handing us a death sentence. "What are we supposed to do? How do we treat it?" I asked. Hannah looked like she wanted to cry. She gripped her stomach protectively. "Unfortunately, this is where it gets tricky.
Treatment is tough, and it's not always effective. There are lots of controversial treatments that exist, but sometimes I think they do more damage than they do good. Is she going to get worse? Like, will she keep hurting other kids? What are we supposed to do? I asked. A million scenarios whirled through my mind. There had to be treatment. There just had to be. She was too young to be broken for life. Nobody was that damaged. I refused to believe that. I'm going to switch the focus of our therapy and move into empathy training. We've touched on that briefly before, but I'd like to get back to it. Sometimes with proper training, kids like this can learn empathy. The good news about Janie is that she does have the ability to develop attachments. She's always had a strong bond with Christopher, and even though she fights you, Hannah, part of the reason she's so hostile toward you is because she depends on you. If she didn't have those skills, I would be more concerned. But I think we can build on what is already there. Tell me the truth. Will she get better? Hannah asked. Yes, I believe she can. I won't make any guarantees. Nobody can make any guarantees. But she's been doing great for months. The baby has just set her off. It's disrupted her and shaken up her world. So she's reverting to old behaviors and trying out some new ones. She's afraid the baby is going to replace her. It was what I'd been afraid of all along. How do we help her? I asked. I think we should start meeting at least twice a week, maybe even three times, for as long as we can. She's going to need lots of help, but we can get her through it. She smiled at us. You three have already been through a lot, and this is just a bump in the road. I looked at Hannah again. She stared back at me. She didn't have to speak to let me know what she was thinking. This was more than a bump in the road. It was a sinkhole.
34. Hannah Bauer. My eyes snapped open. Searing pain shot through my back. There was water between my legs. I'd wet myself during the night, but didn't have any memory of it. I rolled over and threw my legs over the side of the bed, pain gripping me with each movement. I waddled into the bathroom connected to our bedroom. I pulled my underwear down, and that's when it hit me. Christopher, I think my water broke. He was up and in the bathroom in an instant. Are you sure? I nodded, in too much pain to speak. I didn't even care that he was seeing me on the toilet. Let me get you clean clothes. You just wait there, he said. The pain slowly subsided, and as it left, I couldn't help but smile. Allison and my mom had told me last week when I'd asked them about the Braxton Hicks contractions I was having that I'd know when it was the real thing. There was no mistaking it. This was the real deal. Christopher was back in no time, carrying clean underwear and the comfortable outfit we'd picked out months ago. Let me help you, he said, bending over to hoist me off the toilet. I waved him off. I'm fine at the moment. The contraction stopped. I got dressed while he called Allison. When I was halfway through brushing my teeth, another contraction seized me in its grip. I breezed through it until it passed. Allison arrived like she'd been waiting for our phone call. She was breathless as she ran over to me on the couch, the bags we'd packed weeks ago at my feet. She gave me a huge hug. It's happening! I'm so excited for you! She looked like she had on Christmas morning when we were kids, and had just run downstairs into the living room to see what Santa had left us underneath the tree. I'm going to be an auntie! I burst out laughing. Are you in a lot of pain yet? She asked. I shook my head. Not yet. She gave me another big squeeze as Christopher came out of the bathroom, then pointed at the door. Okay, go, you two. I've got everything under control here. Don't worry about a thing. Just go have that baby. I'd never felt so acutely alive and present in my body. I wanted to hold on to it and savor the moment before the pain worsened. Christopher held my hand and drove like an 80-year-old man on the way to the hospital. He knew there was plenty of time to get there, and his biggest fear was someone crashing into us on the way. They put me on bed rest as soon as they wheeled us onto the labor and delivery unit because my water had broken. I wanted to walk the halls, do something besides just lie there, but I was stuck flat on my back. Christopher flicked through the TV channels trying to find something to watch, but nothing interested me. Time stood still as we waited for the baby to arrive. They checked me every few hours into the night, but I still wasn't dilating. They started me on Pitocin somewhere around 4 a.m., and that's when everything changed. I'd heard the stories about Pitocin making your contractions more painful, and they were all true. Within an hour, I was in mind-numbing pain. It was the only thing I could focus on. My entire body shook. Christopher held my hair back while I puked and tied it up in a ponytail for me afterward. My insides felt like they were being twisted apart. I clung to Christopher. His face was covered in sweat. His hair stuck up haphazardly from him running his fingers through it again and again. "I can't do this. I need the drugs," I cried. On my birth plan, I had laid out that I was committed to natural childbirth and didn't want any pain medication. I wanted to experience everything, since it was going to be the only time I'd ever do it. I'd also read all the studies about how the drugs could slow down labor and increase the likelihood of having a C-section, and I wanted to have a natural birth. "Are you sure?" he asked, the doubt written on his face. He'd listened to me rant for hours about doing labor drug-free. I gritted my teeth against the pain. "Yes." "I'm going to get the nurse," he said. "I'll be right back." He hurried out of the room and returned with one of the nurses. He rushed back to my bedside and started rubbing my back. "Don't touch me!" My entire body felt like it was having a contraction, beginning at my neck and moving all the way down to my feet. White-hot pain at the center. His touch made it worse, not better. He flinched and stepped back. "Okay, whatever you want. You got this, honey. The nurse is here. She'll help you." His eyes pleaded with her to help me. "I want the drugs. Give me the drugs," I shouted at her. "I understand that," she said. Her voice was calm, unfaltering. "I've called the anesthesiologist. He's with another patient right now, but he'll be with you once he's finished with her." She moved the top of my bed down. "I have to check you again to see how far along you are." I gripped the side rails as I lay back and almost passed out from the pain. White spots danced at the corners of my vision. I reached for Christopher and dug my nails into him. "Please, please, I changed my mind. Just give me the drugs." He used his other hand to wipe the hair from my forehead. "You're almost there. The doctor is going to be here any minute." The nurse pulled her hand out of me, and her face filled with compassion. "I'm sorry, but it's too late for the drugs. I can feel the baby's head in the canal. You're going to have to push soon." I shook my head like a mad dog. "I can't do it. I'm too tired. It hurts. It hurts so bad." "You can do it, honey. You can do it. I know you can. You're strong," Christopher said. My room filled with more nurses and another doctor in addition to my own. Everyone slipped on gear and surrounded my bed. Christopher lifted one of my legs while one of the nurses lifted another, pulling them back against me. "Stop! Stop!" I shrieked. "I can't do this! I can't!" "Just relax. Take a deep breath," the nurse instructed. "Breathe. You've got to breathe." I couldn't concentrate on anything except the searing pain shooting through me again and again. "Okay, Hannah, push," she yelled. They all chanted to 10 while I gritted my teeth and bore down. Animal sounds came out of me. They gave me a few seconds to breathe and then made me do it again and again. I didn't think it was ever going to stop. "It's burning. Something is burning." I wept from the pain.
Just push, the nurse said. I can't. It hurts too much. But my body ignored me and pushed anyway. I can't do it anymore. Christopher looked down at me. I locked onto his eyes, feeding off his strength. You can do it, honey. Just one more big push. And just like that, my baby was here. I felt the release immediately as the baby slid out. The doctor grabbed the baby and laid it on my chest. It's a boy. It's a boy, Christopher cried out. Tears streamed down my cheeks, all the pain forgotten as he let out a wail. He instantly searched for my breast, and a secret space opened up inside me like it had been there all along, just waiting to be discovered. He latched on to my nipple. I laughed and cried at the same time. He's perfect, I said over and over again, as Christopher worked with the doctor to cut the umbilical cord like we'd planned. I fell in love with my baby boy instantly, marveling at his perfection and that he'd lived inside me for so long. My feelings stemmed from the deepest parts of me. He wasn't a stranger in my arms. It was like a missing piece of myself had been returned. They wheeled us from the delivery room into our hospital room. My head throbbed with exhaustion. All I wanted to do was sleep with my baby cuddled on my chest. We had just gotten settled in our room when he started crying. I heard plenty of babies cry, but I'd never heard a baby scream like someone was pulling their limbs off. I tried to nurse him, but it only made him angrier. I tried everything to calm him down, jiggled him, walked him, sang to him, and talked to him. But nothing worked. He screamed for the next 8 hours. Christopher and I took turns trying to calm him down. I was supposed to be resting when it wasn't my turn, but it was impossible in a crammed hospital room. I couldn't relax a single muscle. My body was tensed and hyper-alert as he screamed. I was driven to do something, and my body physically hurt from not being able to stop his pain. As the sun came up, the three of us piled on my hospital bed with the side rail raised on each side. I was on one side of the bed while Christopher was on the other. We took turns holding the baby. We slept for a few hours, but things got busy in the morning. We settled on the name Cole. Christopher's grandmother was named Nicole, and we'd already decided to name the baby after her regardless of the gender. Our room bustled with hospital activity, and even though Cole finally slept on and off throughout the day, we were awake as our visitors showed up to congratulate us. Allison called, and we asked to talk to Janie, but she wouldn't speak, not even to Christopher. She's had a difficult night, Allison said. I didn't have the energy to even ask about it.
35. Christopher Bauer. Hannah and I were wrecked by the time we got home from the hospital. We'd barely slept for 3 days. Janie had refused to come visit the baby and was bouncing with manic energy since she hadn't seen us for so long. I helped Hannah over to the couch and got her settled with Cole. She was still in a lot of pain from where she'd torn during delivery and from getting stitches afterward. Come meet your baby brother, Cole, I said, motioning for Janie to join us. She stood in front of the fireplace, shaking her head. I tried again. He wants to meet you. He's so happy to have a big sister. Look how cute he is. She glared at me before moving to hide behind Allison's legs. It's okay, Janie, Hannah said. She looked exhausted. You don't have to meet your brother right now if you don't want to. You have plenty of time to get to know him. Janie asked to be picked up, and she clung to me. She stuck her thumb in her mouth, something she'd never done before. He's so precious. Look at those tiny fingers. Allison nuzzled Cole's face with her cheek. Is he still crying a lot? Hannah nodded.
It's not as bad during the day, but he screams all night long. I think he's got his days and nights mixed up. It usually only takes a few days or so for them to adjust. Thank God, Hannah said, looking relieved. It's pretty brutal. It wouldn't be so bad if he were just awake, but he screams like he's in pain. It's like something is hurting him, and I don't know how to fix it. Allison hugged her from the side. He's probably colicky. Mom said I was. Maybe it's a firstborn baby thing. Or he could be hungry because he's not getting enough milk. Has your milk come in yet? Hannah shook her head. I wish it'd hurry up. He's probably starving to death. I sat down with Janie on the couch next to Hannah and Allison, hoping her curiosity would get the best of her and she'd be forced to look, but she buried her face in my shoulder. Why don't you take Janie to the park and I'll sit with the baby so Hannah can take a nap? Allison suggested. The last thing I wanted to do was walk to the park. I wanted to nap with Hannah, but being a parent meant you put your children's needs above your own. Parenting hadn't wasted any time making its demands. Go find your shoes, Janie, I said, putting mine back on.
36. Hannah Bauer. Christopher and I arrived at our pediatrician's office for Cole's 5-day appointment with a list of questions. Cole hadn't stopped wailing, and we hadn't slept for more than a 2-hour period in over a week. Dr. Garcia checked him over. He was gaining weight and responded to all of the doctor's touches, pokes, and prods just like he should.
He looks good. Do you have any questions? He asked.
We pulled out our list, but I jumped to number 1 immediately. He cries whenever he gets tired, and he really gets worked up at night, I blurted out before Christopher had a chance to speak. Dr. Garcia nodded.
Yes, all babies cry when they're sleepy.
Yeah, but he cries for hours before he goes to sleep. Hours, I said.
Oh, he might be a colicky baby, he responded nonchalantly, not the least bit disturbed. It will pass in 3 to 4 months.
I wanted to break down and sob in my chair. He might as well have told me it was going to last 3 to 4 years, because a minute of Cole's screaming felt like hours.
Is there anything we can do to help him? Christopher asked. You could try gripe water. Sometimes that works, Dr. Garcia said.
The problem was, we already knew that it didn't work. Christopher was obsessed with finding something to make Cole stop crying. Once, while I'd fed Cole, he had scoured the internet, searching for a solution, and gripe water was one of the first things he'd stumbled across. It had done nothing, much like everything else we had tried. Thankfully, my mom was coming tomorrow. I couldn't wait to have someone around who knew what they were doing. Christopher tried to help, but his solutions didn't make sense, like suggesting I go shopping while he stayed home with the baby. Never mind that the baby would starve without me. I could barely walk and hadn't stopped bleeding. Nobody had told me you bled so much after birth. I tried to hide my annoyance with it, but sometimes I couldn't. It'd be nice to have someone around who knew how to help.
37. Christopher Bauer. Lillian had only been gone for 3 days, and Hannah was already stretched to her limit again. Cole was a voracious eater and fed every 2 hours, sometimes sooner, and she wasn't sleeping more than a few hours at a time. Even when she slept, she wasn't completely relaxed. She jolted awake at the slightest sound. Cole was in a bassinet next to our bed, and she obsessively woke up to check and see if he was breathing, terrified of SIDS. When he's sleeping, you should just let him sleep, I'd said last night after she'd gotten up to check on him for the 3rd time. I'm just making sure he's okay. She'd looked insulted that I'd even suggested it. The lack of sleep made her jumpy and edgy in a way I'd never seen her act before. I worried what she'd do if Janie gave her any trouble when I went back to work tomorrow. I wasn't ready to go back, but I was out of paid time off since I'd taken so much of it when we'd got Janie. Nobody was ready for it, least of all me. I want you to be good while Daddy is at work today,
I said to Janie while I poured the milk into her bowl of Cheerios the next morning. We'd been arguing for weeks about getting help at the house, but Hannah refused to hire anyone. It wasn't that she didn't think she needed